Your basketball appointment show starts now. This is Bucks Weekly, your weekly checkup of your Milwaukee Bucks and all around the rest of the NBA. And now here's your host, Justin Garcia.
All right, a big win last night. One of the biggest wins of the season for this team, erasing a 17-point third quarter deficit, 5 minutes left. And just when we said this last night on Bucks Talk, just when you thought we were maybe going to have to finally have the conversation of should we actually be worried about this team, the Bucks storm back and do what they did in the final 17 minutes of the game. And certainly with a lot of insights on that and many other things, we will hear from Marcus Johnson as he is the guest on Bucks Courtside with Gale Klappa. Momentarily, we will get to that conversation. But as you heard in the news there, still no Chris Middleton. And, you know, we've had this conversation for weeks now. There is no timeline for Chris Middleton's return. And it was the same ambiguity that we were dealing with a season ago with Brook Lopez. It's very similar to the ambiguity we had earlier in the season before Chris even stepped on the floor, before Pat Connaughton made his return. And it's just the unknown part that makes this all the more anxious for Bucks fans of, well, when is Chris going to be back? We truly don't know. We've said this many times. This Bucks offense is still going through things. And Chris Middleton is going to change, I think, a lot of that. He's not going to change all of that. You can't just pin your hopes on Chris's return to boost this team into being a top five offense. But it makes it better. And the other thing that makes it better is something that we can control and we are seeing in the here and now, and that's Joe Ingles getting more time with his teammates and growing more accustomed to where guys are going to be. I mean, another thing we discussed a little bit last night was, you know, Joe Ingles coming from the system he came in Utah. Obviously, there are some similarities and there's some familiarity, the relationship that Quinn Snyder had or has with Bucks head coach Mike Budenholzer. As Joe Ingles said over the summer, you know, that was really the biggest reason why Joe Ingles, from the onset, was interested in the Bucks. That was his number one choice. Was, I knew the relationship that Quinn had with Bud, and we got to talk a little bit. This is where I wanted to be. But it was just such a different offense. And we've talked about all the things that Joe Ingles brings to the table. He's essentially a 6'10" point guard. His passing ability, his playmaking ability, he's one of those floor generals that you always hear that verbiage, right? He's displayed that the more comfortable and the more chemistry that he's developed with his teammates. And when you look at the Bucks' numbers with Joe Ingles on the floor versus off the floor, that offense is improving. It's about a 115 offensive rating in the minutes that Joe Ingles is on the floor. Season as a whole, it's a 110.7. That is 25th in the NBA. Sixth worst in basketball. So, I mean, 115 is better than league average. 115 puts you in the top five. The more Joe Ingles develops that chemistry, the better this offense is going to look. And again, Chris Middleton is going to change a lot of that. But the big thing that really stood out to me last night was I think we're starting to see Joe Ingles turn the corner and really know where guys are going to be and develop those second nature things. Because you look at the final two quarters of this game, what the Bucks did with the basketball is what stood out the most. Really, the last 15 or so minutes, they had one turnover. And Coach Budenholzer talked about that after the game as well of, look, we did a good job taking care of the basketball down the stretch, and specifically highlighted Joe Ingles and Drew Holiday. That has not been the case for most of this season. 15% of Bucks' possessions have resulted in a turnover. That is 24th in the NBA, and the numbers have been even more dreadful since December 1st. So you've got to work on improving that. But look, without Chris Middleton, we don't know when he's going to be back. You can't spend your time worrying about that. He will be back. We just don't know when. You can't focus on that. What you got to focus on is getting Joe Ingles up to speed, utilizing Joe Ingles more, 28 minutes last night. That's probably the high end of what you're going to see from him. But take advantage of the things you can control. You hear it so much in life, and it applies really to all areas. Control what you can control. You can control not turning the ball over. You can control dominating on the glass. You can control scoring around the basket. And those are three things the Bucks took advantage of last night, and hasn't necessarily been the case since December 1st. So you got some big matchups this week. First of those is tomorrow against the slumping Hawks team, and then two games against the Miami Heat team that maybe, just maybe, they're starting to find their footing. So we'll take a look at those two matchups. Reveal the sub of the week. And which of those, because two teams, three games, two teams is what we got for the remainder of the week. Which of those is the marquee matchup? We'll get to all of that momentarily. But up next, Gail Klappa had a chance to catch up with former Bucks player and current Bucks TV announcer Marcus Johnson. You'll hear that conversation after this on Bucks Weekly.
The names you know.
We're joined by one of the key players on the Bucks roster, Bucks forward Pat Connaughton. He's a player that Wisconsin fans know well. Wesley Matthews, a majority owner and the current governor of the team, Mark Lazzari.
Talking about your favorite basketball team from on the court to off.
You never know. You might not have that many years left. So the hunger is for sure still there.
But I mean this. I think the fans in Milwaukee honestly recruited Bobby Portis more than anybody. I mean, he loves the fans in Milwaukee.
It's time to go courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Here's your host, Gail Klappa.
Hello, everyone. I'm Gail Klappa, and this is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Don't look now, but the NBA season is about to reach the halfway mark, and the quest for championship glory is beginning to take shape. For the Bucks so far, it's been a story of the good, the bad, and the injured. Yet despite the challenges, the team is in the thick of it. After our barn burner in New York last night, the Bucks stand just 2.5 games back in the tough Eastern Conference. So where do we go from here? Well, tonight, we'll get some insight from a pro who knows the game inside out. A five-time All-Star, his number 8 hangs in the rafters at Fiserv Forum. And Marcus Johnson tells it like it is as a game analyst on Bucks Television. Marcus, welcome. Great to have you back with us on Courtside.
Always a pleasure, Gail. Thank you very much.
Well, Marcus, let's dig right in and start with the biggest comeback win of the season for the Bucks. They came alive last night from 17 points down in the third quarter against the Knicks, and you were there.
Yeah, I was there, and I was very pleasantly surprised with the effort and the fact that this team had an opportunity. I mean, and speaking candidly, Gail, I didn't know which way it was going to go. I didn't know if we were going to lose by 30 or show the fight and grit that has been the trademark of this team ever since Coach Budenholzer's taken over. So last 4 or 5 years, this team has been a team that competes. And so I was just hoping that they would compete, not get embarrassed in New York, and coming off the heels of that embarrassment to Charlotte a couple of days prior to this game in New York. And they did that and more. And so I was really happy that they kicked off what's going to be a pretty challenging 4-game road trip. Atlanta coming up, and then back in Miami on Thursday and Saturday. So it's going to be a challenging road trip, and that was a great way to kick it off. And the thing I liked more than anything about it, Gail, was that we didn't have to overburden Giannis to get the win. He didn't have to score 50 and get 20 rebounds and dish out 12 or 13 assists. He was able to get it done. I think his usage rate was in the low 20s, which is really abnormal for him. He's usually up in the high 30s. He and Luka Doncic lead the league in usage rate. I think they're 1 and 2. So the fact that we didn't have to overburden Giannis, his 22 points on 15 field attempts. He did a great job knocking down his free throw, 9 for 12, rebounded as he always does with 10 boards. But 7 guys, double figures. That is such a beautiful thing to see in the stat sheet, and that's the big key as to why the Bucks were able to pull that biggest comeback of the season off.
And Marcus, Joe Ingles, a newcomer, of course, to Bucks fans, was a big part of that comeback. Tell our listeners, if you will, what Joe Ingles, in your mind, could mean to this team down the stretch, Marcus.
Well, you saw it in the game last night. He was, in terms of plus-minus, the team was a plus-14. They outscored the opponent, the Knicks, by 14 points. when he was on the floor, that was the highest plus minus of the night. Giannis, for example, was a plus nine. Drew played great. He was a plus seven. And so that speaks of the contributions that he makes at both ends of the floor. He is a guy, Gail, that is excellent with the basketball in his hands. There was a sequence late in the game where Coach Bud took him out of the game to give him a well-deserved rest in the fourth quarter, and then put him back in with about 5-6 minutes left in the game. And I think that very first possession that he got back on the floor, I think Giannis isolated and maybe shot a pull-up jumper. And I made the comment that, look, if Joe is out there, he's got to touch the basketball. And then the next three or four or five possessions in a row, he was involved and made good things happen. So just a very high basketball IQ. I watched him play, Gail, as a rookie with the Clippers in training camp and exhibition season. Doc Rivers was the coach, and it was a numbers game. And so they had too many guaranteed contracts, the Clippers did at that time. I think Doc made a phone call to Chris Snyder in Utah, saying, look, I got this 27-year-old, lefty, white guy, can't jump, not quick, but he can play in this league. Australian guy. And so the rest is kind of history in terms of what he did in Utah. And that's been his trademark. He really knows how to play the game of basketball, but also how to use the attributes of the, outside of the athleticism and all the other things that we normally associate with great players. He's got ability. Don't get me wrong. And he's got ability. He's just not the kind of ability that we're used to seeing being able to be successful on this level. And he knows how to play, and the international experience, the experience as an Olympian for years, really shows through. And that's the kind of veteran experience and leadership that this team really, really needs at this point, especially with Chris not being in there. So I'm trying to come up with a nickname for him. I mean, I was listening to Eric Collins from Charlotte call him Jingling Joe. I'm not sure if that's an official nickname or reference or not. Almost like Junkyard Joe, because he is as tough as a junkyard dog, and he gets into it and talks trash to the opponent and talks trash to his own teammates and just kind of keeps everything kind of, on edge out there. He puts everybody on edge, and that's the kind of guy that this team really needs. It's similar to what P.J. Tucker did for this team in a different vein in terms of bringing an element of toughness and high IQ basketball to a team that can use it at this point.
Marcus, I love Junkyard Joe. I think that would be a great nickname for him that could stick here in Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, we got to see how he, I'm going to talk to him today and see if he's adamantly opposed. I got to see with this Jingling Joe thing. That was Eric Collins from Charlotte, their play-by-play guy, trying to be funny, or if that's something that's actually been a nickname for him for a while. So I like to always kind of run it by the guys, and make sure that they're not offended or not, adamantly against something like that. But I'll explain to him that, that's from a bad Leroy Brown by, I think, Jim Croce. Me and a junkyard dog, better than old King Kong, me and a junkyard dog. And that's that attitude that he brings to the floor for the Bucks.
Yeah, Marcus, you and I are old enough to remember that hit. It was from the 1970s, and you're right, Jim Croce, badder than a junkyard dog. Well, Marcus, we can't talk about the win last night or the Bucks season so far, for that matter, without talking about the great play night in and night out from Brook Lopez. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it's funny when you just set that up. I was trying to anticipate which way you were going, and it could have gone a number of ways. Obviously with Giannis and then Drew with this performance last night. But Brook has been as consistent as anybody on his level. And I say that primarily, too, thinking about what he brings to the table in terms of a two-way presence. Once again, he had multiple blocks in the game. He had three block shots to go along with his 17 points. He was aggressive, shooting the basketball, 9 3-point attempts. He knocked down three. I think he hit a big one in the quarter himself. So, it's remarkable. I think 15th year, I want to say, Gil is somewhere thereabouts, and 33, 34 years old. I've known Brooks since he was 3 years old. His older brother Alex played against my old son Chris in high school. So Deborah's mom, used to bring in Robin to all the games when they lived in Los Angeles out in San Fernando Valley when Alex played for Campbell Hall High School. So I remember those two little rambunctious three-year-olds, about 4 feet tall at that time, you know, just huge. And you could tell they were going to be humongous. The next time I saw him, Gail, was in high school. I did a summer league televised game for cable in Las Vegas. He and Robin played along with Quincy Pondexter, who was a high school teammate, and played against I forget who they played against, but it was a really good competitive game of high school basketball. But you could see then, is my point, that he had an extreme amount of talent. I did his games at in college against USC when he was at Stanford. Brooke had a triple-double. He had like 18, 19 points, about 12 rebounds, and about 10 block shots. And he was the offensive brother of the two. Robert was the defensive guy. He was the offensive guy. But Brooke is the one with the triple-double that I'll never forget. It's indelibly etched into my memory because of the block shots. And so now he's taken that to another level and should be a strong, strong candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. Had been leading the league in block shots until recently when I think Jaren Jackson's been on a tear, overtaken him. But he's still number two, I think, tied with Nick Claxton going into the Knick game. So his ability to control the paint defensively, to contest shots, leads the league in contested two-point shots, but to contest without fouling has always been something that Coach Budenholzer has emphasized, keeping teams off the free throw line. Brooke does as good a job as any center in the league. And aside from that, you know, just one of the nicest, most respectful, thoughtful, creative people that I've been around in this sport, and just a pleasure to interact with them every time I get a chance to, on the road or in practice or on our bus rides to the arena, wherever it happens to be. Brooke is just a class individual, and just a real joy to watch him continue to blossom, especially after last year when his season was cut short initially by the back injury. Then he came back and played played okay. But now we're seeing what the healthy Brooke Lopez brings to the table. And again, to me, it's Defensive Player of the Year level basketball, along with the bonus of having it, being able to score 14, 15 points a game.
Well, I have more with Marcus Johnson in a moment. This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
You're listening to Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Here's Gail Klappa with Bucks legend and analyst Marcus Johnson.
Marcus, two words, Bobby Portis. He's grown his game. He's turning in the very best season of his career. And I'm curious, Marcus, why is Bobby such a good fit in Milwaukee compared to the other teams he's played on?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing that jumped out at me about Bobby when he first got to Milwaukee a couple of years ago was his speed up and down the floor. For a guy his size, 6'10", a legit 6'10", 250-plus pounds, but his ability to run the floor just stood out. So what that means is that he's got some innate athleticism that most guys his size don't possess. And so where that trans, if you watch him play, you know, you don't really feel like you're watching a guy 6'10", 250. That's why I keep mentioning those measurements and that height and weight, because he plays like a guy about 6'6". And that is a compliment in terms of his mobility, his quickness on the floor. Basketball, quickness is more important than speed. John Wooden, my old coach at UCLA, would always say that he much preferred quickness as the main attribute of any basketball player. And Coach Wooden, with 6'5 centers and Fred Slaughter, and along with 6'11 center, I was going to say 7 feet, but Bill Walton would get mad at me if I list him at 7 feet. He's adamant that he's 6'11 and 7'8", or whatever it is. I am not 7 feet tall. Like 6'11 and 7'8". Okay. All right, Bill. But Bill was athletic and as quick as you'll find for a guy his size. Bobby Portis fits into that same mold. He's got this tremendous quickness. So that and his understanding of what this team needs from him. And so, you know, a lot of guys in this position, Gail, would be like, hey, I deserve to be a starter. I mean, look at my numbers, my rebounding, the double-doubles that I put up, what I've done on a consistent basis in terms of scoring the basketball night in, night out. I should be starting. That's not Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis understands that for this team, the way this team is constructed, that his best contributions are coming off the bench, and you've got to have depth, quality depth in this league to be successful. He gives the Bucks that. You couple that with the fact that against Boston, he understood that the Celtics were a team that was not going to allow him to get some clean looks from the three-point line. He was shooting maybe close to 40% over last year from the three-point line. He's not shooting quite as well this season. So, but he had to develop more. He had to expand his repertoire offensively. And so now you're seeing shot fakes and floaters and back to the basket, fadeaways and big footwork inside. And that to me, Gil, when I see a guy that has expanded his game, you don't fall out of bed and say, hey, today I'm going to expand my game. No, work diligently every day in the summer, twice a day, 2-3 hours session to expand your game. And now we're seeing the residual effects of all of that hard work and dedication from Bobby Portis to expand his game so that he would give the Bucks even more in terms of what he can bring off the bench. So all those things just put together means that he is a perfect complement to the other players, Giannis and Brooke and Chris when he gets back, but also in terms of attitude and mindset. Let me throw this out here, and I probably shouldn't. I may lose my job for saying this, but after the blowout against Charlotte, I like to go back to the Bucks dining room near the locker room and grab a bite to eat before I walk to my apartment, which is right in the vicinity of Fiserv Forum. So I'm headed back to the dining area in the Fiserv Forum. The Bucks had just gotten blown out by Charlotte, 30 points, an embarrassing loss. And I hear a voice, emotional, reprimanding guys, and really, really fired up about the lackluster performance. And I'm like, oh, is that Coach Bud? You know, lightning to the guys. It wasn't. It was Bobby Portis. I recognized that Southern drawl, that Arkansas drawl. I was like, hey, that guy's from the South, whoever it is. Wait a minute, that's Bobby. But that's the kind of leadership role that he's taken with his team. And it was a great reminder to me about his role as a member of this Milwaukee Bucks team, as a champion, as a guy that's been there now and knows what it takes to get back. And that's something that's just going to add to the quality of this basketball team.
Yeah, very interesting, Marcus. And as you know, the Bucks obviously miss the presence of Chris Middleton. Tell us a bit about the injuries that have kept Chris off the court, and when do you think he might return to action, Marcus?
I don't know, man. I hope soon, Gil, because, and I say that selfishly as someone that wants this team to play at its highest potential, and you can't do that without Chris. There's a stat that I came across in my research for the Knicks, that there's 13 teams right now that have two guys averaging 20 points a game. That's the highest number that it's been for a long, long time. And I thought to myself, it's like, it should be 14. It should be 14 because the Bucks should have Giannis at 30 points a game, 32 or whatever it is, and Chris at around 20-plus points a game. And so from that standpoint, you miss him. But even more so, just as a person, as a quality individual, I know he's got a desperate desire to get back out there on the floor. I've seen him working out in the practice facility, how hard he's working on everything, conditioning and skill work and shooting and everything he can do with in terms of being limited by that knee injury. And people don't understand that he just kind of mentioned the fact that he had a lot of swelling in his knee. And I didn't have to hear anything else. That told me that he was incapacitated to the point where this was the best move to shut him down. Because with that swelling, if you get out there and try and come back too soon, it's just going to keep happening over and over again. It's going to be a lingering issue that will stay with him the rest of the season. And we don't want that to happen. So we got to bite the bullet and continue to let the Pat Connaughtons and the Grayson Allens and the Bobby Portises and everybody else kind of try and hold the fort, Joe Ingles, until Chris can get back and be healthy. But once he comes back, he gives Giannis that complimentary guy that I don't even want to say his sidekick. It's like 1A and 1B. And Chris is our guy, as we've seen in the playoffs last couple of years, close games. He's the guy that you love to have with the ball in his hands because he is so clutch in terms of knocking down big shots in a close ball game down the stretch. So I just hope for his sake that everything goes or continues to go well with his rehabilitation and he's back in the lineup soon, because I know how badly he misses it.
Amen. More with Marcus. This, it's Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Here's Gale Klappa with Bucks legend and analyst Marcus Johnson.
Marcus, you've been around the game for decades. You've seen the game change. You've seen it evolve. Do you think we're now in the golden age of scoring in the NBA?
Wow, that's a tough one, Gale. I'm a guy from the old school, and I think in terms of sheer numbers and volume of quality scores in the league, and yeah, I mean, you look at the number of guys, and I'm not sure what that number is now, but it was at one point 8 or 9 guys averaging right around 30 points a game, and I think it's still around there. I mean, you got a LeBron James just turning, what, 38 late December, who's averaging, you know, 28, 29, whatever it is. The explosion by Donovan Mitchell, 71 points. I mean, it's routine. I think Lauri Markkanen had a 49-point game the other night. I was reading about. And I mentioned earlier that you know, you got more teams with two guys averaging over 20 points than this league has had in a long, long time. So from that standpoint, it is indeed a golden age. And I think the reason for it is, number one, yeah, the rules have been relaxed in terms of how much contact you can use at the point of attack and forearms and hand checking and all that we were so good at back in the day in terms of controlling these great scores as much as we could. But I think even more so, and I was talking to a couple of ex-UCLA guys who are great skill development people, Earl Watson and Rico Hines, assistant coaches with the Toronto Raptors. And they thought it was also, Gale, a result of the year-round training that these guys put into their games and how back in the 90s and the 80s in my day, season ends, you were pretty much on your own. I had my own personal trainer when I played, one of the first players to do so. And so we would get together 5 days a week and work out, you know, 2 times, 3 times a day. But now it's such a year-round process with film session and looking to see how you could exploit whatever changes that teams do schematically, defensively. And let me point this out. I knew we were headed into a serious scoring binge direction. It was about 3 years ago, Gil. We're playing Utah. Giannis is defending Jordan Clark about 2 feet beyond the three-point line. And normally that kind of a shot, that distance is a shot that you beg a guy to take. Giannis, a big, tall defender, could contest, makes it difficult to shoot over him. Jordan Clarkson went twice between his legs, behind his back, stepped back even further, shot about a 30-foot pull-up off the dribble three that went nothing but the bottom of the net with Giannis in his face. And that's when I thought to myself, oh, boy. This is a seminal moment right here in terms of these shooters. Steph Curry was always that kind of a deep-range shooter, but now – you know, you got a role player, Jordan Clarkson, coming off the bench, able to manipulate a bigger defender, defensive player of the year like that far away from the basket. And to me, that just showed that these guys put in a tremendous amount of work on their offensive package. And I think the scoring right now is a residual effect of all that work they put in.
Fascinating. Marcus, now, one more question for you. I got to ask. You're famous for lumbering up on your birthday and seeing if you can still dunk the ball. Will we be seeing you doing another birthday dunk in a few weeks?
Well, listen, my birthday's February 8th. Now, if you would have asked me this question, today is when, around first of January, you'd ask me this question 2 weeks ago. I'd have said, I don't know, because I was suffering from a really sore hip, some irritation. My right hip, I'm probably going to have a replacement at some point in time. I've been putting it off, Gil, because every 5 years they upgrade the surgery. They come up with these techniques and new materials to do the hip replacement with. And my thought is like, well, if I can wait out another 10 years, they may be able to lay hands on me and I'll be healed. Like, you're healed, go. And so I've been putting it off, which is not a great thing. So, but this year my hip has bothered me more than it ever has. I've been limping around. And so I went to see, and again, I may get in trouble for admitting this, but I went to see an orthopedic in Milwaukee, great orthopedic doctor, and she suggested I get a cortisone injection. I did the cortisone injection, and now I'm feeling good, Gil. Now the hip, the inflammation, the soreness is gone away, and I'm walking without a limp, and I'm walking up hills, the Madison Square Garden is this incredible slope to get to the arena. You can take the elevator and walk up the slope. Yesterday I was like, well, let me walk up the slope and see how the tip feels. I felt great, passed up Coach Budenholzer and the other guy walking up the slope. So yes, the dunk is on. I'm feeling good. I'm going to continue to do my flexibility exercises for this hip and strengthening exercises for the hip and my legs and everything. I've been working out, man, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, getting ready. And there was just the soreness in the hip, though. That was the one thing that had me kind of questioning whether or not this may not be the year for it. But, man, that injection, I'm old school. When she asked me, when the doctor said, now we can inject it, and it'll make it feel better. I'm like, hey, hit me. Go ahead. I'm not afraid of needles. Go ahead and shoot it up and give me the most you can put in there that's allowable, and let's see what. And so yes, it's feeling better, and I'm feeling better, and I'm anxious and looking forward to the first part of February and getting another dunk off at 67 years old. Yes, indeed.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to the video and the Phi Slammajama. And Marcus, always fun to visit with you. Thank you so much for being with us. And you've been listening to Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ. So long, everybody.
All right, our thanks to Gail Klappa and his conversation with Marcus Johnson. If you missed any of that, you can find the entire interview and this show and Bucks Talk on the Bucks flagship podcast feed. Time to reveal our sub of the week here. And we've kind of joked sub of the game is a no-brainer most of the time, where it's typically Bobby Portis. And now maybe it's going to be either Bobby Portis or Joe Ingles. Sub of the week is kind of becoming the same thing. So for last week, it's Bobby Portis. In the four games played, Bobby Portis had three double-doubles and did average a double-double, I should say. 15 points, 10 rebounds. He continues to average a double-double on the season as well, but Bobby Portis continuing to give you that lift off the bench. So Bobby Portis is our sub of the week, but keep an eye on Joe Ingles. Three games played last night, that would have been something, last week. Averaged just under 10 points, shot 43% on threes. I know it's just three games, but 43% three-point shooting, four assists, one turnover. Look, if you can get that from Joe Ingles, think about where this team is at. You get Chris Middleton back. You heard some of that commentary from Marcus Johnson, too. Get Chris Middleton back in the mix. Joe Ingles. I don't know if Junkyard Dog is going to stick as a nickname.
Junkyard Joe.
Junkyard Jingles.
Ooh, okay. I like that one.
Or the Jingles Junkyard. We'll still workshop.
We'll workshop it. Yeah.
But, man, if you get that back, you get Joe Ingles running the bench, essentially. Bobby Portis coming off the bench to give you some scoring. I made the case last night. I still like Grayson Allen on the bench because of Javon Carter playing next to Drew Holiday and how that really boosts the defense and makes Grayson Allen basically a designated shooter. I know it limits the time he's playing with Giannis, but you're asking him to do less because, again, it all ties together with the absence of Chris Middleton, with what guys have been asked to do to fill some of that void of not having Chris Middleton. But the other thing I'll point out is this. For Joe Ingles specifically, he's starting to come around when you look at the effective field goal percentage and true shooting in the last handful of games. They play at a faster pace when Joe Ingles is on the floor. Hard to believe. They play at a faster pace. Their offensive rating, we already mentioned, goes up. 115.7 with Joe Ingles on the floor. It's starting to come together for Joe Ingles. We will take a look at the final three games this week. Two opponents, three games. We'll preview that and wrap up the show next on Bucks Weekly.
You're listening to Bucks Weekly on WTMJ.
Come on, man. Just another day in the NBA, man. Every day is a dog fight.
Ain't no way they can stop me now. Daddy, because I'm on my way. I can feel my ring coming.
Final few minutes here on the program. And I got to clean one thing up. I said 115.7. It's 115.3 is the offensive rating with Joe Ingles on the floor. Now, what we're not going to mention is it's a 115.7 defensive rating. But again, they play at a faster pace. Mentioned Joe Ingles, basically a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. We'll take more of that. 22%, basically 23% assist rate. Tops on the team. He moves the ball. He makes those connectivity passes where it's not just, hey, make the easy pass. How do we keep things moving here? That's what Joe Ingles brings to the team. So give me more Joe Ingles. When you get Chris Middleton back, that's going to help the half-court offense. That's really been the biggest issue for the Bucks, is their offense in the half-court. They haven't been playing at that fast of a pace. When, you know, we traditionally think about the Bucks getting into transition and fast break points for Giannis, we haven't seen a whole lot of that. And a lot of that has to do with getting stops, right? The defense is kind of crashed back to earth. They're still a good defense, but this was a dominant, elite defensive group to open up the season, and that's just changed in really the month of December onward is where those changes have really been most visible. Defensive rating, it's still, as we said, good. They're third best defense, and really not a whole lot is separating 1 through 3. It's the Cavs, the Grizzlies, and the Bucks. 1 through 4, for that matter, is less than a point per 100 possessions that is separating that group. But this team, defensive rating was dominant early in the season. So you got to get back to that and just create easier offense in the half court. 3 games left this week, and it's only against 2 teams. So tomorrow night you're in Atlanta to take on the Hawks. And all of these teams, when you look at the majority of the teams that the Bucks have recently played, the Knicks, who you played last night, just a game out of the 6th spot. The Hawks, who we just mentioned you play tomorrow night, 3.5 now out of the 6th spot. The Heat, who you have 2 games against Thursday and Saturday. Saturday afternoon, by the way, noon tip time. They are 2 games out of the 6th spot. You just had the Raptors last week. You just had the Wizards. Those are 10 and 11. The Bulls, they're 10th. Raptors and Wizards are 11 and 12. So a lot of the Bucks' schedule coming up here is against those teams 6, 7, 8, in that range. So this is the time to start to take advantage. And again, as we opened up the show last night on Bucks Talk, we opened it up today and said, you know, we were 17 minutes away from maybe having to have a difficult conversation of, should we be worried? I've been telling you, I'm not worried yet. Certainly not panicked. It's too early to be concerned or to be worried. You can have concerns, but I'm not there yet. Well, we were 17 minutes away from me rethinking that. And what the Bucks did to erase that 17-point deficit, that could prove to be the galvanizing moment and a turning point of, hey, remember when things were going south and then all of a sudden the Bucks came back from down 17 and they were just a totally different team from that point forward? That's what we hope it is. Health is going to be a big, big part of that. So again, tomorrow in Atlanta, no Chris Middleton once again, but we'll see what we can get from Joe Ingles running that second unit offensively and more of those minutes with Joe Ingles on the floor with Giannis and Drew and Brooke Lopez. And let's look for that defense to start to tick upward. Rebounding and turnovers, though, the two things to really keep an eye on each and every game going forward. Tomorrow night in Atlanta, 6:30 tip, 6 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins, and it's a back-to-back as well. So Thursday night in Miami, a 6:30 tip as well. My thanks to Gail Klappa, his conversation with Marcus Johnson, Tommy Wirtz for producing the show. We will talk to you tomorrow night with Bucks Talk following the game against the Atlanta Hawks.